Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Rune. I'm your host and moderator, joined, as always, by three of my good friends, the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Gentlemen, how y'all doing today?
Could be better.
I don't know why I torture myself. I really don't.
I mean, because we do it for the love of DC Sports, even though DC Sports does its best to make us fall out in love with it. Well, regardless, let's just go ahead and jump right in. Let's talk about baseball. Open this episode up by talking about the reigning defending world champion Nats.
The season's over. Can't say that for much longer.
Yes, we can. This is an asterisk season.
Reigning defending legit champions.
Yes, exactly. This season
champions.
This season doesn't count. But yeah, so the end of the season is today, unless I'm incorrect on that, but I believe the last day of the season is today.
Yeah, unless there's some weird tiebreaker game, I don't really know.
This is it for the Nats.
Yeah.
This is the middle of their last game.
Yep,
they're currently up on the Mets right now, but it is the last game of the season for the Nats, and unfortunately they will not be making the playoffs. But some good news. Davey Martinez was extended. The details of the deal are unconfirmed. Just want to let that out. But they're saying it possibly could be about a 3-year extension for about $7.5 million. But again, unconfirmed. Definitely not, you know, set in stone.
Yeah, there's some the sources from this are. Not the most trustworthy. Nightingale is a guy that kind of gets the information out first rather than make sure it's correct. And he's the only one that said it's 3 years, $7.5 million. The rest of, we'll say, more trustworthy writers have not said anything yet.
The issue with that is just how news agencies kind of spin it. So, like, you have Bob Nightingale saying it, and then you'll have one like USA Today picking it up and saying in this article, and they have this long paragraphs of information on Davey Martinez, etc. And then like a little blurb and said, oh yeah, by the way, Bob Nightingale said this. Yeah. And then ESPN will be like, oh, in this article by USA Today, Davey Martinez got like all of these news agencies will report it, but it doesn't mean that it's coming like it's all coming from one semi or probably not very trustworthy source.
Yeah, I mean, the way I like look at it is I don't try to look at the national newspapers or reporters such like USA Today or Bob Nightingale, who don't have a focus on one team. I pretty much look at the beat writers for the Nats, the local guys like Washington Post, that sort of stuff to get the and Masson to get the actual information. And none of those guys have said anything, even when the 3 year $7.5 million came out. None of them said anything about it. Which makes me believe that like nobody really knows. They're just kind of throwing out a random number.
Which is kind of interesting.
Speculation.
Because in the other sports, the NHL, NBA, and the NFL, they all have insiders that are like pretty legitimate that'll often get news out before the
There is like some guys like Ken Rosenthal is pretty trustworthy. So there is like some national news guys that I would consider trustworthy, but I don't think even Ken Rosenthal said it was the 3 years. It's just Bob Nightingale is one of the guys that's just like, he cares more about like efficiency rather than if it's correct or not.
Yeah.
You have a lot of postings and like some are bound to land, others won't, but like the some that land, you'll be like, oh yeah, I got it here first.
Mm-hmm. So you can get that all per Bob Nightingale, blah, 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 blah thing on all the news, like, or Bob Nightingale first to report, or whatever it is. But on the flip side, maybe, like, the beat writers are kind of playing to the Nats, like, organization hand of, like, they don't want the information to get out. So maybe the beat writers are, like, not increasing that and, like, allowing it to get out. That's the only other option that I would see that none of these guys are saying anything.
What do you think is the reason for that? Like, not wanting...
I mean, they're just trying to be, like, if the organization that you report on, that you're around all the time, that sort of thing, doesn't want it, the information out, and they've kind of said, like, they don't want us to know. Like, you might try and keep some good faith for that little snippet that isn't really, like, too important.
Oh, I meant like not the news agents or not the beat reporters. I meant the organization. Why do you think they don't want David Martinez's contract information to be out there?
So they can fire him whenever they want.
I was thinking so.
And
they
it's
don't
like
have
they won't get. They won't get pressured to make a choice in the last year of his contract like they kind of were this year. That might be like they're thinking about what happened this year. They had to think about it. They had to, the agent had to start thinking about it. Even when we knew that they were going to re-sign Davey, I guess it's like still something in the news. So now like it probably will still be to a little bit in 3 years because of this information that came out. But I think that it won't be as much because nobody has really confirmed it.
That's kind of interesting because like managers and coaches get fired all the time with like years and money still left remaining in the contracts, and they're still paying it out even when that coach or manager is playing with another team.
Yeah, I mean they might just like not want to have it be a factor in the decision making process.
Yeah, and they might have like a set amount of money they want to spend on a manager. Like, just the budget-wise, and they don't want to go over it by firing one or making a decision to have that information out there.
It's kind of a leverage play, because if they have it out there, then all of a sudden they could face media pressure if like, Davey starts, like, underperforming as a manager, which, I don't think this is going to happen. I think Davey has more than proved himself to get this extension. But I think it's just, you know, I mean, it's a big corporation basically, you know, covering their tracks in terms of liability.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just move down a little bit, talking more about some of the, like, at least from these last four games of the season. Granted, obviously they don't mean anything, but it's still cool to see. The big thing is Andrew Stevenson can hit. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he's been batting about 400 in the last four games.
He's got two hits today, too.
He's been good, but he's been with the team for a pretty solid amount of time now. I don't expect anything from him. Like, I think there's going to be a lot of hype into the offseason about him. I think if that's the case, it might be a little bit easier to move on from Adam Eaton if he continues to play like this, but I don't know. I'm not put all my eggs in the Andrew Stevenson basket because he has been with the team for a solid amount of time, and he's been pretty trash for a solid amount of time.
So he has four more years under arbitration, and then we'll see what happens. Well, so yeah, so contract-wise, we know we have him for another 4 years, so there will be some – I think you're right about that. There's going to be some hype about him going into the off season. Will they start him? Will they move on from Adam Eaton? I don't know, man. I mean, what is it, about a 11 or 12 game hitting streak with a 7 game extra bases hitting streak. He had two homers off of Jacob DeGrom the other day. So he definitely has had a really good end of the year here. I'm not sure what it means for next year. I kind of agree with you, Chris. I don't want to read too much into that because, yeah, it's been a great streak, but I don't want to rely on him as a starter next year. I think you'll assume he'll make the roster next year and you'll see where it goes from there. He'll probably get some spot playing duty, and if he keeps playing well, then you never know, but I'm not going to read too much into this either.
Eaton's currently on a
Eaton's got a 1 year team option, so the team would have to pick up the option next year for Eaton.
But Stevenson's longest season was 2018. He played in 57 games, but in that season he had a negative .2 WAR, which isn't ideal, and then his batting average is only .253. So like, I think that is probably more close to what you're going to get out of him. He hit 367 last year in about 30 games. Or not 30 games. Yeah, 30 games, but only 37 plate appearances. So, I mean, he's been solid in very, very, very limited work, but when he actually, like, plays more, it's a little bit worse.
I think they'll, personally, what I think they're going to do is I think they'll pick up Eaton's option, and it'll be a kind of a committee thing with him and Stevenson. I think they were trying out Juan Soto in right field, weren't they?
Well, they were. So that's kind of the exciting thing that I'm interested in. Because there is a solid amount of left fielders that are coming out, including Jock Peterson, George Springer, and fuck, there's one more. Who's the other one?
You mentioned it, and I'm forgetting.
Yeah.
So they were trying out Juan Soto at right field, kind of just to see if he could handle that area while we went after a different left fielder, or maybe kept Stevenson in left field a little bit longer.
Ozuna. Marcell Ozuna is the other one.
That's right.
So there's those three guys that are coming out. That's the fun kind of, hey, maybe we'll snag one of those guys to come and play. That would be pretty cool. If that were the case, that they signed him, I don't know when they have to make the decision for Eden's option.
If we signed a kind of a pricey left fielder, we would probably not pick up Eden's option though, right?
Probably not, yeah. And you'd probably see Soto move over to right.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Marcell Ozuna can't play in right to save his life.
Mm. Kind of sad to see because we're missing our race car duo with
Howie,
Eden, yeah, Kendrick retiring or planning to retire, and Eden's on a team option that we may or may not pick up.
We're just going to have to start a new race car duo to continue the legacy.
We'll have to get Soto a race car.
New legacies. You know, to hit on the Howie thing real quick, it seemed like there was a lot of, not disappointment, but it would be really sad to see him retire. But I'd honestly be okay with seeing him retire because he's 37.
Howie?
He goes out on top, you know.
Yeah.
He goes out as a Nat, right, too. And I want him to go out as a Nat. I don't want to see him anywhere else. So I would be okay with him retiring. I kind of figured this year would be his last.
I think Howie might be in the same kind of, I don't really want to go anywhere else at this point. Maybe he'll go back to LA, but I doubt they have a spot for him on the team over there. But that's the only real thing. Like, I don't imagine him going to a new team either way.
I think, and I think even if he did go to a new team, I feel like he'd play like 1 or 2 years, and then I don't know how this works in MLB, but maybe he'll sign like that one-day contract to retire as a Nat.
I don't think he would do that for the Nats. Yeah,
if he's a Nat, I mean, he wouldn't go to another team for a year and then retire as a Nat because he only spent a couple of years here, but he obviously had his most meaningful years here.
Yeah, if he was to do that with any team, it would be LA because he was there for a long time in LA.
Mm-hmm.
So either he'll retire as a Nat just this year. I don't think he'll do the LA thing if he stays with the Nats, but if he goes with another team, I imagine he'd retire, quote unquote, as a Dodger or a Nat. More likely a Dodger if he goes somewhere else, though, I'd say.
Makes sense. And there is a mutual option for Howie and the Nats next year at $6.5 million.
I think the Nats will pick it up.
It's just that whether or not he'll pick it up.
Yeah.
Or if he'll retire.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more than he made this year, so I don't think he's going to get a better offer anywhere else. So it's very possible that we have Howie again next year, and I'd be all for that. But, you know, whether it's this year or next year, I do think he'll retire, and hopefully, you know, it's as a Nat, and that'll be good. I'll be happy for him.
Going back to picking up probably a left fielder, it's kind of exciting spending free agent money on bats. And a few years ago when the most expensive bat, Bryce Harper, left.
Bit of a different story.
Bit of a different story, but we can talk about the Phillies and their playoff chances, which are fucking faltering with them down 3-0 to the Rays. We kind of fucked up with the Mets, actually. They lost their playoff chances game 2 against us in their series, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, it's always good to see division rivals go down, but unfortunately, with that comes with division rivals going up. And while I'm happy that we were able to ruin the Mets' playoff chances, you know, seeing the guys like the Braves like get up so much and get out of reach, I mean, it is disappointing to see. But I mean, the Braves are just a really good team, so
The fun thing, going back on the Harper thing real quick, the fun thing is he's been pretty mediocre with them the past. Like, he's hitting a lot of home runs, but, like, other than that, like, his stats are pretty, like,
he's striking out a lot.
They're not bad, but, like, they're not.
Rendon had a better year last year, and Soto had a better year this year.
Yeah, you know, like, he's not
the star, but
he's not doing poorly by any means, but he's, like, not doing what you would be paying him for. So I'm pretty happy that the Nats didn't, like, get him at this point. If he continues to be like this for another, what, 10 years, he's going to be with the Phillies. I'd be okay with that. That's a lot of money sunk into one guy for pretty mediocre stats. Anyways, yeah.
His OPS is 882 and 961 his 2 years there. And kind of for reference, he started his career with the Nats in the lower 800s. His MVP year was a 1.1, went back to 81, and then he had a 1.008. So, I mean, you kind of, if you were to project what he would look like the next 10 years, you would expect more consistent OPSs over one, because he had done it two in his last 3 years with us, and he hasn't quite hit that mark again. And that's just one of the statistics. I mean, he is hitting decent amount of home runs, but, you know, it's only one statistic. We didn't win the World Series last year with home run hitting.
I mean, he's making $27 million this year for pretty middling stats, I'd say. Anyways.
And I don't think he's upset by that at all. All right, guys. Well, I want to go ahead and talk about, with the Nats, just some of the – we made some predictions at the beginning of the season. We had some – general ideas and general ways the Nats could go and perform well in this shortened season. But I think some major factors really did take our predictions and throw them out the window. Some of the big things being Stras and Castro both going down with injuries to end their seasons. Stras with carpal tunnel, Castro with a wrist injury. And just some bad seasons from our closers, from Doolittle, from Hudson, from Will Harris, just... overall, I think our bullpen struggled a lot, and they didn't have, and I think Chris, you had mentioned this, like they didn't, where they, like the team in general just didn't have enough time to get going, since it wasn't, you know, a shortened season with 60 games as opposed to the traditional 162 game season. And I think that really hurt the Nats. In addition to that, you know, some first baseman struggles, because since Zimmerman opted out of the season, we had troubles getting a solid first base option with, you know, with Thames and with other guys in general, and also a false positive test for Soto. Because, well, based on what the circumstances we heard surrounding Soto's test and just what Soto was doing, like in the precautions he was taking, it seems very, very unlikely that he had COVID and it was just a false positive test. And I think not having Soto for, you know, the first couple weeks of the season really kind of derailed the Nats' chances, especially since the 60-game season, and every game now matters so much more. Ultimately, I think it really, really hurt the Nats. If there were any predictions you guys had that were right, please let them out right now. Otherwise, offer up your thoughts.
I don't know if I quite agree with the fact that our bullpen was really bad, because the guys that we expected to carry our bullpen were really bad, but we actually had a lot of guys that stepped up and played really well. Tanner Rainey, Kyle Finnegan, Ryan Harper was, you know, hit or miss. Wander Suero was hit or miss. But I think the bullpen had actually taken a really big step up this year, and I would say there's a lot to look forward to with that bullpen, because you have a lot of young guys that are going to be here for a while that are going to be anchoring that thing. So, you know, I think the bullpen actually was, in my opinion, more of a pleasant surprise. I don't think Sean Doolittle is going to be back. I think you're going to have another year of Daniel Hudson, and you're going to have another 2 years of Will Harris, because those are the contracts that they signed. And you're going to have to hope that you can really get them to improve their play. I would not re-sign Doolittle, just because I'd be wary of signing older guys in the bullpen right now, unless they can get Doolittle to sign like a vet minimum type deal, which, you know, I don't think he'll do that, but
I think he's going to sign for pretty cheap no matter where he goes.
Yeah.
Relievers are pretty cheap to begin with. but I kind of disagree almost in every way about I think the bullpen was pretty trash, minus Tanner Rainey and maybe Kyle Finnegan. Kyle Finnegan was a pleasant surprise, but Daniel Hudson wasn't very, like, their whips are absolutely god awful across the board. Ryan Harper is 1.6, which is pretty terrible. I mean, there's not really like a good, like, the second, like, behind Tanner Rainey, there wasn't really much to be pleased with.
Yeah. Well, my concern is those two guys that are still under contract, Hudson and Harris.
Hudson wasn't bad. Like, he needed to be better for, like, what we were expecting out of him.
He started all right, and he kind of just fell apart.
And then, like, if Wander Suero is, like, kind of your second best guy, it's probably not a good sign, even if he did have a good year. But other than that, like, Will Harris was pretty terrible all season long. And, I mean, Ryan Harper wasn't very good either. But I don't think we were expecting that much out of Ryan Harper.
I think Suero was developing into an average pitcher, which is, like, good because he really hasn't played like that. It's just Will Harris's contract really sucked. Looking at it, like, and I do feel like he's going to be a better pitcher for us, and this was just kind of a shit year. He came with us, he got injured, and like that kind of hampered his play, and then he never really got his confidence going to continue with that. And I think like next year we can expect a much better Will Harris performance. Doolittle, I think we're gonna see walk play for pretty cheap, but it's not going to be as national. And I hope you think that Doodle is going to stay.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like they've got guys coming up through the pipeline that that would be able to replace him very well. Like, he's not going to be expensive for one.
Yeah, I was thinking
off such a bad year, so I think they're going to re-sign him in the end.
Yeah, I was thinking that, but, like, his exit interview, he was pretty pessimistic about staying with the team. Like, he wouldn't say, like, outright, I'm not going to stay as a national. He would just, like, let's just see how the market looks like, and et cetera, et cetera. It didn't feel like he was giving off the vibe that he really wants to stay, even though he does like it here in D.C. and other stuff like that. But, yeah, I'm kind of, like, I was glad to see Tanner Rainey step up and play pretty damn well as Kyle Finnegan. But yeah, just hoping Hudson was a bit better and Doolittle didn't collapse.
Kyle Finnegan was not as good as Tanner Rainey.
No, he wasn't.
Tanner Rainey was far and away the best.
Tanner Rainey was the best, yeah. He was great.
It's not even close.
What I forgot to mention, though,
Kyle Finnegan pretty much did as a little bit better than I think was expected. But Wander Suero definitely did better than expected. Daniel Hudson was worse. Will Harris was much worse.
Yeah, but not talking about our closer relievers, but like Ossoff and Fetty, both was not that great at the beginning, and I think he played better like late in the season. And then Fetty was just kind of bad. Really? I thought he had that one good game.
He had one good game, and he had no other good games. But the last, I'm trying to find it. Yeah, Voth was just not good at all. I mean,
he gave up 4 runs today in 4 innings.
The story of this team was the starting pitching this year. And I'm looking at the stats right now. Overall pitching, we were ranked 25th out of 30th in the league.
Jesus.
So that tells you everything you need to know. That's starting and relief pitching.
We're going to have a new 4 and it, my God. Next year is going to be rough, I think.
Well, Scherzer's still going to be there.
We got Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, Fetty as our 4 right now.
I do want to ask this question. Looking at Scherzer's stats between last year and this year. Is it possible that he took a step back this year? Because I kind of feel like he did.
I think he took a bit of one, but I think he was looking better and better these last like 4 or 5 starts. So that's the one thing that I'm kind of hoping. Like, he's always been a
mid to late season guy.
Yeah.
Ramp up player.
Yeah. Anibal Sanchez is the same way, but I don't think you can bet on Anibal Sanchez re-signing him.
Probably not.
He's probably done.
Yeah, his contract.
You can get another pitcher just as good as Anibal Sanchez on the market, probably for cheaper.
Yeah. So you're really gonna have to hope that Scherzer and Strasburg stay healthy next year. I mean, that's really your bread and butter. That's how you're gonna go to the playoffs. Is you have those guys are healthy. You have Corbin being healthy, and then you have a good enough fourth and fifth. They don't have to be amazing, but I think if Eric Fetty develops a little bit more, and if we can find a fifth guy,
I mean, we do still have Joe Ross,
and we have guys coming up too. We have Joe Ross, Jackson Rutledge, maybe Will Croak develops a little bit this off season.
Kate Cavalli,
yeah. As well. So you know, there are a couple options there for the fourth and fifth spots.
What did you say?
I was going to say Romero, but we're not really holding out hope for
him. Romero? No, fuck that. If he's the fifth starter, I might cry.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, the season's over for the Nats, but we now look forward to the offseason. And, you know, hopefully a lot of these players that were struggling can, you know, get their groove back, develop their skills better. And, you know, guys like you mentioned, guys like Rutledge, guys like Ross, you know, continue to develop and hopefully get better. And if we can have a good starting five pitching, I think we'll be all right, because our bats are decent. You know, Soto's a god. Trey Turner really, really took a lot of improvement this particular season in terms of his batting. You know,
outside of Juan Soto and Trey Turner, our bats are not decent.
Well, hold on. But Castro was also another guy before he got hurt.
Luis Garcia
has been, and that's assuming that Luis Garcia keeps it up.
I think he will.
That, I think I don't know. Maybe I can see where you and I disagree on this, but I also think that, you know, Soto, Turner, Garcia, Castro, like our bats, I think can lean towards a decent. I mean, obviously we're gonna have, you know, our, you know, big body Thames, unfortunately not hitting as well as I thought he would
be. Garbage. I hate garbage Thames.
Did we?
Luis Garcia started off really well, and then like he went down to like a 653 OPS and a 269 batting average.
Well, let's not bro, facts don't care about my feelings. No, I'm just kidding. Oh.
But going into the positive things that went well and like that may have overreached our predictions, do we think that Turner was gonna turn the corner, as it were, like play this much better?
I've been waiting for him to have this kind of season. I think it was gonna be last year before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that he had it this year, because I kind of thought this season was coming up last year.
That is nice that we do have Trey Turner and Juan Soto as kind of the corner pieces for at least the next 3 or 4 years. Hopefully Luis Garcia continues to improve. I really hope that he works out with Soto a lot during the offseason. I think that would be really, really good for his potential outlook if those guys just... Especially because they're from the same country. I think that would be definitely a positive. Maybe Robles can get on that bandwagon too.
Oh, wow.
One
last question. Sorry, Varun. Do you think...
Michael A. Taylor still sucks.
Do you think Juan Soto can get better defensively? Or like, do you think this is it for him?
I feel like he can still take another step forward. He's got to improve his arm. Especially if we're trying to move him to right. I don't know if he's going to get much better, like, defensively, like, playing. But, I mean, he's so... it's hard to say.
All right. I
don't really know.
Well, I think we could save this conversation for the future. Since we are, you know, over half hour into baseball. But why don't we go ahead and move on. Talk about the topic that I've wanted to talk about today, which was football. The Washington TBDs took on the Cleveland Browns today, and they lost 34-20.
Good God.
Yep. Okay, here it is. Haskins sucks, bro. Like, the fact that he is staring his receiver down and still can't throw it accurately to him is a massive problem. And I think Rahul had a text in the group chat earlier where it was like, how does Haskins make easy movements look so difficult or something like that. And it
he makes every goddamn throw look so fucking difficult. Like, he's fucking Atlas holding up the world. I don't understand how this quarterback is playing this badly when he was making magic happen at Ohio State. Like, it's fucking frightening. Like, what? He's really holding back the offense a lot more than Scott Turner's play calling is, or even Ron Rivera's refusal to use timeouts or do all of the other bullshit in terms of game management being more aggressive. He's really holding back this team's potential. And I think one last thing before you go, Varun. When Ron Rivera and Scott Turner kind of mentioned this, I'm kind of paraphrasing this, like, don't be surprised if the offense isn't actually rolling until 2021. Like, maybe not like that, but like kind of like expect the offense to be a lot better in 2021. I think they were saying that not because of any new piece they were going to add in terms of skill players, but because they were going to fucking replace the QB. They knew that Haskins wasn't going to be the answer for the type of offense that Scott Turner wants to run. So they're going to probably look into the draft and draft their QB. I don't think Kyle Allen's the answer either, and they shouldn't start him against the Ravens. That's just like, that's an awful idea.
You are sending Kyle Allen out to slaughter.
The wolves.
You are literally killing him. You may as well just roll with Haskins until the bye week and then make a decision. It doesn't make any sense throwing Scott Turner out there, but that would be kind of funny. Kyle Allen. To get drilled. Yeah, don't run it like that, Scott.
Just running plays over and over again and be like, hey, Scott Turner, this is what you should be calling on a regular basis.
Scott Turner can't be much worse than what Dwayne Haskins is doing right now, let's be honest.
Like, Kyle,
the positives we had for him in the first week was that he didn't turn the ball over.
That's fucking gone.
And then he goes to turn over the ball four times this week.
I mean, let's be clear about Haskins. His accuracy has been an issue in every game this season. He's missed some very easy throws and has missed a lot of opportunities, but it finally really manifested in the worst way this week, not just with god-awful throws, like missing screen passes, missing guys wide open in the end zone. It didn't just manifest into missed opportunities, but it manifested into three picks and a forced fumble that was lost.
Even in
it was a disaster.
Workouts and practices and combine, he was missing screens. Like, no one is rushing him. He is missing screens. How the fuck do you do that as an NFL quarterback?
You cannot do it.
It's mind-boggling. And, it just really, I get that he's young. I get that he probably shouldn't have declared for the draft and spent another year in college and really honed his craft. But this is just, really sad. And I feel like my analysis of his play is more emotional-based just because we took a fucking beating from the Browns of all teams. And their defense shouldn't be that good, but we made them look like the Ravens defense, who we're actually going to play next week. So what are we going to make the Ravens defense look like? The fucking Broncos Super Bowl defense?
It's gonna look it's going to look exactly like last year's team getting blown the fuck out, 59-0 next week.
And sorry, Vera, before I went on, Tyree, where were you trying to go with this?
Honestly, basically what you said with you know, less F-bombs, I'm going to be honest with you. But
hold on, I want to say one thing. Oh, sorry, Jerome.
Sure, Nick. This is very entertaining.
This is sharing all our fucking feelings.
I want to reiterate something that we were discussing privately about Kyle Allen. I wanted to see Kyle Allen in this game because after Dwayne Haskins has thrown three interceptions, there's no coming back from that. You're not going to come back and lead final two touchdown drive. The game was over for him, and at this point he was only going to go out there and make things worse, which he did by losing a fumble. So I was calling for Kyle Allen only because I wanted Riverboat Ron to send a message that, you know, this isn't really your team. You haven't really earned it yet, and you shouldn't just assume that this is your team. You need to go out there every single week and play like it's your team. So I wanted that message to be sent, but I don't want us to actually rely on Kyle Allen as a starting quarterback. I wanted him to go out there in cleanup duty just for today, but you know, obviously that didn't happen. My hope is that they give Kyle Allen a few first team reps this week, but don't actually play him.
I see. The thing is that I still want a Kyle Allen to get in because, okay, granted, he may not be the answer, and that's fine. But if one, you get Kyle Allen first, you get Kyle Allen some actual snaps in, like in an actual game, he can gain that experience, which is valuable. And I mean,
he's not a starting caliber guy. I mean, he played a lot of games last year and he has a lot of experience, but he's never really going to be a starting caliber guy. He's there to be a backup. He's there because he knows the offense.
I don't think you put Kyle Allen in for his sake. Like, I think he's not going to do anything for you. I think it's kind of like Nick said, to bench Haskins.
Yeah, I don't think Kyle Allen is there to
The backup quarterback has anything to do with it.
You know another quarterback that thought he wasn't the answer? Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh my God. Look at him
now. We saw the same thing just a few years ago.
The best way to get amazing play out of Ryan Fitzpatrick is tell him he's not going to be the quarterback next week if he doesn't perform today. And he will go out and put on a show, bro.
Just tell Fitzpatrick, like, hey, man, just play out there. And then he will fucking light it up like it's nobody's business.
All right. Jokes aside, this game was very disappointing. One thing that I noticed was that there was not enough running, in my opinion, because McKissick was doing well. You know, Gibson was doing well. Even if they don't have a clear-cut starting running back yet, like, that committee is... Rahul, what was the yards per carry for Gibson, or was it McKissick?
Preach it, Varun. Preach it.
McKissick's... I think Gibson had the most running.
It was something... I think it was something like 6 yards per carry,
ran the ball 9 times... for 49 yards, a 5.4 average.
Yeah.
Maybe McKissick ran the ball 5 times for 15 yards, but McKissick also
was more of a 37 yards threat.
In the receiving game.
Still though, you have a deadly commit. You have a really good committee there, or like that at least has potential to be really good. You could make it the same 1-2 punches. I don't know, the team that they were just playing today with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You could develop it into that route. Perhaps maybe you make Gibson the workhorse back, and then you have McKissick out there for, you know, pass plays and fourth down and possibly red zone stuff as well. But, you know, TBDs have the potential to have a really stellar run game. Yet for some reason they're insisting on having Haskins throw the ball, knowing that, one, he has not developed his skills or mechanics to the point where he can, you know, legitimately get the ball out there. And two, if you are staring your receiver down and still throw it inaccurately, bro, just stop. Like, it's done. It's a wrap, bro. Like, you can't stare your receiver down and throw it that poorly. That is QB 101, bro.
One comment here is that the 1-2 punch isn't going to be Gibson and McKissick. The 1-2 punch is going to be Gibson and Love whenever the fuck he gets on the field.
Well, okay, either way, no matter what it is, the thing is that the committee is still there. Even if McKissick is not the answer, even if Gibson and Love is the answer, doesn't matter what combination of it is that the running game is there and they're not utilizing it well enough. Or they're not even utilizing enough, actually, because I don't have the breakdown in front of me in terms of passing to running, but to me it looked like it was 70% passing, 30% running today.
We're getting in like at most 20 rushing attempts per game with all of the running backs, and I don't think we're running the ball enough. Like, I completely agree here. I think part of the issue of not coming out fast enough, I think, is that we're just not throwing, and Haskins is not throwing the ball well in the first half. In this game, he didn't throw the ball well at all. I think they need to try to set up a run game in at least one of these games and see if you've got something there. Gibson, we keep talking about how he's going to have his breakout game, but we're not really giving him that many carries. He's having like 8 to 10 carries at most a game, and his average is not bad. I mean, it's in the fours, but we're not giving him an opportunity to break out because he's not getting a 20 rushing. He's not getting like 20 or 25 rushing attempts. He's getting like 9 like he did today. And that's just not good enough. You're not going to have a breakout game if you don't give the guy the ball.
I think we should develop the run game for a better QB. Like, it doesn't matter if we develop the game for Haskins.
No, you're right. There's no argument for me on that.
What if you have Kyle Allen out there as, like, he hands the ball off?
Yeah, but I mean, Kyle Allen's he's a temporary solution.
It's not even a solution. It's just it's a different quarterback that's like
whether you really want
to win games, they start Alex Smith, and you can't start Alex Smith because he's not ready. Like, I don't physically, think he'll ever be mentally ready.
Don't even think about starting Alex Smith,
I don't talk about playing Kyle Allen for the sake of playing Kyle Allen. I'm talking about playing him so that Haskins gets delivered a message.
But now even looking forward, like now you have, Trevor Lawrence is fine. He's probably going to go to the Jets. But then you have guys like Justin Fields. You have guys like Trey Lance. You have guys like Kyle Trask. Guys like, I don't know, Jamie Newman.
I've never even heard of Kyle Trask.
The Florida guy. The one who's throwing to the Florida Pitts guy, the tight end.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, even taking out those last names, two names stand out to me here right now: Justin Fields and Trey Lance. Both are strong contenders that the Washington football team, assuming that they go on this path of just straight up garbage land, to acquire next year in the draft. You go to Justin Fields and Trey Lance next year, but for the time being, now you have to figure out what you want to do because Haskins clearly is not developing himself the way he should be. And Kyle Allen is not your solution. So now do you go out and to try and sign a quarterback that's sitting in free agency and,
No.
and put him there?
Excuse me. Pardon my language.
No, it's not so much money.
No, it's okay. So now, and okay, another thing I want to point out today, and then Chris actually also mentioned this in our group chat, is that, you know, the Browns beat a Chase Young-less Washington football team. Like Young went down. He was out for the game with a groin injury. I think it was in the second quarter. But, you know, not having Chase Young really diminishes the defense at that point because Chase Young is just good of a player.
We were going to lose the game with or without him.
It was trending in that direction. That's not what I'm saying. That's not what I was saying then. That's not really what I'm saying now.
I misunderstood.
I think they would have. No, I think you brought it up correctly, Vernon. I think they still would have lost. I don't think they would have lost as much. I think it would have been like a one touchdown game, a one score game.
I think
Chase Young is in the game.
Montez Sweat really stepped up in Chase's absence, and we had Settle step up in Ida's absence. We would have rather had them, but like we had good performances from other players who stepped up. And then Kerrigan had that fucking awful false start. Oh God!
Neutral zone infraction.
Yeah, neutral zone. Sorry,
false start defense, you idiot.
Awful. Yeah, that was a bad.
It was so fucking terrible.
What about? Yeah. Wait. So, sorry, guys. Finish your thoughts. I had a thought, and it deterred.
My thought is that this team is garbage.
My thought is that, like, even with the Chase Young, Matt Ioannidis, just them exiting the game, we weren't able to contain Chubb or Hunt that well, and the secondary, Troy Apke, had a near interception the first half that looked really promising, and then he followed that up with terrible missed tackles, awful on that touchdown run from Chubb. That was, oh God. And Kendall Fuller looked fine, but not enough, obviously, to help bring up the defense.
Hey, on the bright side, the NFC East is absolutely god-awful. So there is that.
Yeah.
Is that really a bright side?
Imagine the Washington football team makes the playoffs from the NFC East on 6-10 because the other team is just so awful.
Did you all realize the Eagles and Bengals tied today? I didn't notice that.
The Eagles and the lowly Bengals tied. The Giants got their ass handed to them by the injured 49ers who have like six starters injured right now.
Yep, and the Cowboys are currently playing right the Seahawks.
Against the Seahawks, and they're locked in a 9-9 tie. So I imagine the Cowboys are probably going to end up winning that division, but who fucking knows, man?
I still feel like Giants fans have more faith in Daniel Jones than WFT fans have faith in Dwayne Haskins.
But imagine being But imagine being a Falcons fan, though, bro. Like,
dude, I think Falcons fans might be on some lists tonight.
Falcons fans, have
I'm not gonna say
alcohol. But,
someone
livers, like, a lot of faith in their livers.
All right. You ready for this comment someone sent me in the r/NFL? It said, "Someone, all right, hit me with your best bird facts." Someone said a group of Falcons is called a choke.
That's good.
Yep, very good. But yeah, no, the NFC East is awful, bro. NFC least.
NFC least.
Well, I think the Cowboys are definitely going to win this division, and after that, it's three just awful teams.
Like, the Cowboys are the Cowboys still. Like, they could.
I think they're going to win the division at like 8-8, maybe 9-7, but I think they're going to get
probably
up there.
Right. I mean, yeah, I do the other think teams the Cowboys. I think the Cowboys are going to end up winning, but it is still the Cowboys.
Yeah, they won't do anything in the playoffs like they do every year. Yeah, like every year.
I'm going to laugh if the Eagles go like 0-10-6, like they tie six games.
So apparently Nick Foles fucking popped off.
He did. He went in for Mitch Trubisky as expected, because who still believes in Mitch Trubisky? And yeah, he had a pretty good game. I'm trying to find his stats right now.
He was three.
I mean, either way, that's pretty irrelevant.
Yeah, I was just like shocked because, like,
and we still have a couple more topics to go on.
Yeah,
I think we should move on.
I think we should. Yep, for sure. I have it. 188, three touchdowns and a pick. But whatever.
But all right, just some coaching things. Like, did you guys feel weird about Rivera not using his timeouts again for the second straight week?
Well, we know that's what he's going to do now. So I don't know.
That's his MO.
That's just his MO. I think he knows that this team is not very good.
Has Rivera thrown in the towel?
Yeah, twice in a row, 2 weeks in a row, we just let the clock run. But it's because we're down by two scores, and he's like, I don't want to stop the clock and get the ball back. He's just like, I want to just end the game.
Yeah, I think the stuff about the injuries is kind of a bullshit excuse, and he just wants to get out of Cleveland.
I think he definitely is going to want to draft his own QB next year. So that's going to be a big topic of discussion the rest of this season, is where we end up in the draft. And do we need to trade up, or are we going to have the opportunity to pick a Fields or a Lance wherever we end up? That's going to be the top. That's going to be the top topic this year, because this team is god awful.
The draft is also a top topic for the Washington Wizards.
It's true. Moving into basketball. What a great transition. Rahul learning from me on how to do excellent transitions.
Like, how do I verbalize the Collinsworth slide in?
All right, well, moving into basketball. First thing we want to talk about off the jump is John Wall. NBC
off
Sports
the
said
jump. There's another one.
NBC Sports said it's been 641 days since we've seen John Wall in an NBA game. That's a lot of time. But he has been posting him shooting the ball around on IG, Instagram, for you that doesn't know what IG is, and looks to be in good shape to start the season. You know, the Wizards they're still a developing team, and you know, opinions on Scott Brooks aside, Wall is coming into a much newer team than he's seen before. So will he be able to click with the team?
I'm not going to lie. I am, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Rahul, but I'm starting to become very, very pessimistic about this upcoming season for the Wizards. And
no,
it's not just... not just because of the coaching, but the coaching is a big part of it. And I don't think that John Wall is going to be 100%, even though all the Instagram videos and whatnot make it look like he's okay, just like all the Instagram videos of Dwayne Haskins this past offseason. You know, I just don't feel good about the team next year. I really don't. I think they're going to bottom out, and I think they're going to be a really bad team, and it's going to take some time for them to really turn this thing around. I think the GM will have time to turn it around, but I think they're going to be firing this coach.
But you still think that they shouldn't have fired? Like, you think that Brooks should still have the season, even though it's not going to be a very good season?
I think that if we fired Brooks now, or if we had gotten a new coach, I think this season's going to be a disaster. That's what I think. So I think at this point, it doesn't really matter what you do with Brooks. He's on 1 year left of his deal. So I don't know. But to talk about Wall, I have a bad feeling about it.
I mean, you know, so you get a healthy John Wall back, you get a healthy Bradley Beal, Hachimura gets heals up as well, and some other pieces on the team, you know, they could potentially try to make a splash in this season, but I think with Wall not having played a game in, you know, almost 2 years, it's going to be much tougher for him to, you know, get back into rhythm. And going into, you know, 2022 or 2021 season, you know, there's still a question mark on the Wizards' heads. And ultimately, I think the answer might be a new coach. Whenever that happens.
I just can't think of any players that have stepped away for as much time as John Wall has and just came back to their sport and played. Like, much less than played well, just, like, played.
I mean...
Vaughn Lynch took a year off and then came back for the Raiders.
I mean, Derrick Rose was hurt quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think basketball is a little bit different for injuries than football.
Yeah. But I also think injuries for basketball build throughout your childhood because you're like having like just putting so much pressure on your joints from like jumping, like taking jump shots, taking hits in the box. Like a lot of those injuries build up from childhood and do damage on your feet, your joints, your knees, and everything. And it's like hard to. It's different.
I don't think basketball injuries are ever as egregious for longevity than football. Like, you can still come back after big injuries in basketball.
Yeah, I was just thinking of it piling up because it's not as physical. Like in football,
well, that's true with any sport.
Yeah, I guess so. I was just reading an article on it and trying to kind of like sum it up and like how like some like baseball pitchers like when they're like trained from very young they kind of like overuse their arms and they kind of like fuck up in the pros just because of how they were used in their childhood, and like that also goes with basketball stars. It's just like their jump shot gets fucked up just because of how much they're getting overused when they're younger.
Yeah, it's. I mean, the types of injuries vary from sport to sport, but you know, having an injury in general can still hinder your ability to play, no matter what sport you play. So, you know, well, that's fine. I understand the. You know, football and basketball being two different levels of injuries, but I mean the injuries. I mean, it's still injuries, and I feel like, you know, if John Wall can have like a Derrick Rose esque comeback, then I can definitely see good things happening for the Wizards.
Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
Just,
well,
like their ceiling is capped because of other factors.
Speaking of caps.
Oh god, that one hurts a little bit.
Kind of they stings. All hurt. They all hurt.
All right, guys. All right, so let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. Talking real briefly about the Caps. As you know, we're also coming down from the announcement of the new head coach, Laviolette. But there's some other things going on with the team, mainly trying to get some extensions going with Brendan Dillon and Ovi. Ovi is pretty much a lock, but what's the likelihood of extending Brendan Dillon?
I think pretty good.
30%.
Really? You think that low? Huh.
Yeah, I don't see Ovi on another team, so...
Yeah, I mean, I think Ovi's eventually, it's kind of a when rather than if. I think Brendan Dillon, I think most likely, is going to go back to the Sharks, I would imagine, but I don't know.
I thought we were going to try and do a bigger push to sign Dillon, because we don't...
I mean, they are going to try to sign him. Like, that's why I'm still giving it, like, a 30% chance, but I don't see it happening, is all.
So I guess another question is, you know, with goalies,
So Samsonov was hurt and therefore couldn't participate in the playoffs, but he is going to come back this next season. And, you know, I guess the next question is, do you pair Samsonov with a vet goalie? There's some options out there, like Mike Smith and the Edmonton Oilers, Thomas Greece and the Islanders. Or do you just want to roll with Vanecek and Samsonov?
I think you roll with Vanecek and Samsonov because he was already under Holtby for an entire year. So I would rather, the only real question mark, I don't think Samsonov being on the team has anything to do with it particularly. I think it's if Vanecek is ready for NHL play.
Yeah, I actually agree too. I think you bring up Vanecek and he's your backup. He gets a few starts when Samsonov doesn't, you know, when he needs a day off. Yeah. But we're gonna see if he's ready, and I think that's gonna be the deal next year. Is gonna be Samsonov and Vanecek. Copley will stay with Hershey. Vanecek was always better in Hershey too, statistically, and I think that. Yeah, so I don't think Copley will really be much of a factor
unless somebody gets hurt. Yeah, he's not going to come up unless somebody gets injured. Even then, they might go out and sign a guy instead of having Copley as the backup.
I actually disagree, not with Copley, but I disagree that they should get a veteran just because I don't really trust Vanecek that much. And I think just having, like,
A veteran's not gonna be much better.
You don't think Mike Smith's not gonna roll in and do much better than Vanecek, like behind Samsonov?
I would rather see what Vanecek has, like if I have to choose, than go out and sign a backup. Yeah.
Just the money aspect, or is it just like you don't think the performance will be?
No, I think I just would rather see what Vanecek has than keeping him in Hershey for an extra year. Especially because it's not like Vanecek's going to be the starter either. Like, Samsonov's going to be the starter.
Yeah.
Like, worst case scenario, Vanecek doesn't pan out. You send him back to Hershey, then you can sign a vet as your backup.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, we're kind of like with an old Ovi, old Backstrom. A lot of old players that are, like, playing well right now, and we may lose TJ Oshie, which will be really sad. Just, like, trying to win now and, like, trying to upgrade with whatever we have.
Well, the vet's goalie signing is not going to be an upgrade. It's going to be some cheap guy.
Yeah. I think you roll with Vanecek, and I don't think it's much of a difference. Worst case scenario, Vanecek is Phoenix Copley, and if Samsonov plays at the same level that he did this past year, I think we're going to be fine goaltending wise. And if you have to take a couple lumps with Vanecek in the backup spot, I think we can afford to do that. But I don't think he's going to be as bad as Phoenix Copley. He's been better than him in Hershey. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's a very reasonable backup, and I really don't see an issue with it. You are rolling with two pretty young guys, one guy that's just coming off his first year starting, and then you're coming, and then you would bring up Vanecek, who I don't think has played with the Caps yet. So it is a little bit of a risk, but you know, I don't know, man. Why not?
TJ Oshie still is going to be with the team
this year. It's next off season that the expansion draft happens.
Yeah, it'll be a sad day.
I don't really see a reason to go out and sign a veteran, at least not yet. Like Nick kind of said, worst case scenario, we have Phoenix Copley as our backup, which isn't that bad. The more scary thing is if Samsonov doesn't play how he did this year. That's
the biggest concern you would have. Yeah, because you really need him to at least play at the same level that he did last year. But you're hoping that he's going to take a step up because he's still pretty young.
Yeah, I think he will. He was pretty good, pretty much the entire season. He showed a lot of good flashes. So I think that's more the concern for the team, not the Vanecek versus having a vet as the backup.
Well,
A couple other things to kind of wrap things up is that we're seeing Martin Vehivaari and Daniel Sprong getting more expanded roles in the lines. So that should be good. Maybe rewarding some better play, or maybe just maybe just a little more strategic in how they want to set the teams up.
Going back to Samsonov, he did, as you recall, he did get injured in Russia, like in an ATV accident. Got his neck and back injured, and that's also why I was like suggesting, like, maybe we should, I don't know, like go forward with Vanacek if Samsonov isn't ready at that point. Or like, sorry, meant to say go with a veteran if Vanacek isn't ready, and not like have Vanacek Copley to start the season. But yeah, it's too early right now. We have to see when we're getting closer to the hockey season.
Yeah. Another thing is that Laviolette will not be able to retain all of his own staff, although I would like to see Kevin McCarthy come with him to DC.
I'm okay with that personally, because apparently their power play was pretty terrible over there.
Oh, really?
And that was one of the things McCarthy was in charge of. So I'm all right with that.
Makes sense. I mean, the other thing is I think the big thing is accountability, because I think Riordan was pretty lax with his coaching style, and apparently Laviolette's known for being a little more disciplined. So, and the goal of the hockey team is to get the best out of the vets and, you know, develop the new guys. The one thing that does kind of concern me is that I think it's been reported that Laviolette has not spoken with Ovi yet, and that's a bit of an issue to me, because Ovi is literally the heart and soul of this team, and with Laviolette having not spoken to him yet, that's not a good sign.
That doesn't bother me at all.
I think that, like, they're all kind of waiting till closer to the season. Like, I think if I'm Ovi, like, I don't really want to think about hockey right now anyways.
I think also Laviolette wants to talk to Ovi in person and probably just, like, waiting for the safest opportunity to do so.
He doesn't want to have that conversation over the phone.
That's true. This might be one of those conversations that's better given in person.
Yeah.
So probably just waiting for you know, safety reasons. But yeah, thank you guys for listening to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I've been your host and moderator, joined as always by three of my good friends and the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We will have the descriptions for those social medias in the description of the episode, or rather the links to the social medias in the description of the episode. Until then, continue supporting DC Sports. Let's get Trey Lance to DC trending on Twitter. See you all next week.